Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the new screensavers is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. The new screensavers is brought to you by WordPress. Make WordPress.com your online home. Plans start at just $4 a month. Go to WordPress.com/NSS to get 15% off your brand new website today. And by FreshBooks, the easy-to-use cloud accounting software for small business owners. Make this year your most productive year yet. Try it free for 30 days at FreshBooks.com/NSS. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at RocketMortgage.com/NSS.
HomePod Showdown, turning ones and zeros into rock and roll, and Android Wear versus Apple Watch. Live from Twit Eastside Studios in gorgeous Petaluma, it's the new Screensavers!
Screensavers, Leo Laporte here, episode 143, Saturday, February 10th, 2018.
Dang, 2018.
Can you believe
like
that?
Just yesterday.
That's Jason Howell. That long, tall drink of water is the host of All About Android and Tech
How's
News
going?
Weekly. I am good. And say happy birthday to Seth.
Happy birthday, Seth.
Yeah. It was a surprise birthday from his wife and his parents.
What better place to come than gorgeous Petaluma.
Isn't that nice? Vincent and Gracia came up from Brentwood for this. Amy, his wife. They live in Oregon. They came down. And we're going to put you all to work, okay?
Yes, we are.
Yeah, this is exciting. Ricardo's also here. He's visiting from Mount Pleasant, Iowa. We're going to have you be our audio testing panel.
I love it.
Today we have, and I'm very excited about this, the brand new Apple Home.
Oh, it does. Yeah, it looks a little strange in person. Is that coming across okay on the show?
Yeah, it feels like the Apple isn't that well. And then where's the stem? It fell off in an earlier incident. This is this is a very good simulation that Burke made for us.
Burke's good at that.
Yeah.
Counterfeiting.
We actually have the HomePod, and we're going to do something I think will be kind of fun. We're going to do a test comparing it to other speakers, roughly in its price range. Just so, there you go.
It's a tower of power over there.
Yeah, look at all those speakers. And you're going to close your eyes. Actually, you're going to wear a googly eye blindfold.
All right, I'm down.
And we're going to have our home testing panel. Nice. And they're going to, actually, what we're going to do, we're going to put you in front of the speakers. But one of the things they say with a HomePod is it sounds good anywhere in the room. So we're going to make them stay there. And they may have a different opinion with their backs to the speakers than you do.
This is a pretty open studio, too.
Hard to fill.
So it's probably going to be pretty obvious which ones are performing well versus the ones that aren't.
Also, you're going to do something.
Oh, yeah. We're going to do a little bit more of this whole Twit Switch thing. Can you believe it's still going?
You told me. So the last time you did it last year was 1 month.
It was one month.
The iPhone.
Yep.
Megan took a Google phone. This time, Megan said 6 weeks, and you told me she already wants to stop.
See, she surprised me with the 6 weeks thing during a show. She was like, "Yeah, we're doing it for 6 weeks."
How
I was like, "Wait a minute,
no.
We are okay? Apparently, we are." And then earlier this week, she started floating the idea of, "Why can't we just be done? I'm getting my HomePod. I want to set it up with an iPhone."
How long has been?
It's been a month.
Okay,
and I was like, "Well, you know, I'll do whatever you like."
I think
she loses. You're the one that said 6 weeks.
I think she loses right out of the box.
Yeah.
If she wants to get her iPhone back, that means she misses it.
So she has. We both have less than 2 weeks to go at this point. But we are going to. We kind of did a little bit of a high school debate comparing the Apple Watch versus the Android Wear watches.
Okay.
And so we got a little bit of that.
You're wearing the Apple Watch.
I am. We'll get to it.
I actually like it, he says. How do you replace your Android phone's operating system with something not Google? Batman Stu will join us with our call for help with that question.
That could be a little bit of a challenge. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give you a review of something I've been playing around with called the Fusion Guitar.
Oh, good. Did we get more yellow gold?
I won't impress you with much of anything, to be honest. But the guitar itself is very interesting. It's a smart electric guitar. You can actually dock an iPhone into it, and it has speakers on it. So it's basically like a portable electric guitar with speakers.
Wow.
Interesting stuff. We'll take a look at that.
Father Robert's going to show you how to keep your network safe using something called Nmap. This is something every geek should know how to use.
Yes. And finally, more Android questions, because that seems to happen when I come on this show.
All right. News time. These are the hot topics of the week. I got good news and I got bad news. Which do you want first?
I generally like to start with the bad news.
Are you a bad news first kind of guy?
Yeah, you know, kind of get through the bad news and then end on a positive note.
Well, the bad news, the sad news, and I think you probably already heard, John Perry Barlow, one of the pioneers of the internet, has passed away at a young age of 70. They call him the Bard of the internet, partly because he was a Grateful Dead lyricist with his high school buddy, Bob Weir, for many years, wrote a bunch of their great songs, but also wrote the Declaration of Independence of Cyberspace, and most importantly, co-founded the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Did it with Mitch Kapor, who was the creator of Lotus 1-2-3, and the great John Gilmore, the cypherpunk and Sun programmer. And the EFF has done so much. There's the obituary, very nice one by Cindy Cohn from the EFF on the EFF.org page. I knew John a little bit, went to the benefit because he had some bad medical bills. He'd been sick for some time, and it was a wonderful benefit, and I had the pleasure of interviewing him. Early Triangulation, I think, in the first 20 or 30 episodes of Triangulation. Mm-hmm. Great man, and he will... There we are, number 24. Tom and I interviewed him. Tom also did another interview. We have both of those on our website. Just a great guy. So we're sorry to have lost him, John Perry Barlow.
We actually brought on for Tech News Weekly, Megan and I brought on John Patel, who was one of the founding editors
of Wired.
You know, basically, John Perry Barlow, he was his editor in the early years of Wired, and so he had a lot of information to kind of share about what he, you know, said his eternal optimism on the internet, even though at this point it really seems like Facebook and Google and all these major behemoths have kind of locked it all up, and you know, we're wondering what the direction is. John Perry Barlow would be the man to be, you know, eternally optimistic about it and kind of see the good through all of that.
We had some great conversations. He was skeptical over net neutrality. He understood that we needed to protect this internet from, as you say, these industrial giants. But at the same time, he didn't want the government to weigh heavy on the internet.
Right.
He was a brilliant, smart, fun, personable guy, and we'll miss him.
He also taught us how to be grown-ups, right?
Oh, you want to read a little of that? This was great.
I thought there were a couple of really good nuggets. Yeah. I mean, they're all great.
He wrote this when he was 30, so he really was barely a grown-up. But what he said was, it's 25 principles of adult behavior. It's all over the internet. You can search for it. But what he says was, if this is what I want to live up to as a young man.
Right.
If I don't, I hope my friends will call me on it. Be patient. No matter, I would like to live up to these. Be patient, no matter what. Don't badmouth. I love this one. Assign responsibility, not blame. Say nothing of another you wouldn't say to him. And actually, it goes on in person in the same tone. They cut this off a little bit.
Reduce your use of the first person pronoun.
Yes.
Isn't that
awesome?
Also, give up blood sports is a good one. Because let's be honest, when you're growing up, it's probably a good idea to give up the blood sports.
Admit your errors freely and quickly. Become less suspicious of joy. Understand humility. Foster dignity. Live memorably. He did that. There's no doubt.
Absolutely.
And endure. I wish he did endure it a little bit longer. We'll miss you, John.
For sure.
Now, that's the bad news. Here's the good news.
Okay, good news.
Space is back, baby.
Cool.
Oh, man,
so
did you watch this on Tuesday?
This. So, okay, I missed the actual launch. And actually, because, you know, Tuesday is one of my busiest days here. I was super busy, wasn't really paying attention. It wasn't until later in the afternoon, right around all about Android time, that I saw... what is it, the spaceman flying around in the Tesla in the sky?
So there was a lot of suspense on this. Even Elon Musk, who's SpaceX, made this launch of the Falcon Heavy, the biggest rocket, production rocket, and really the first rocket that could take a man to Mars. That's the point. He said on TV the morning before, about 50-50 chance it'll blow up. So there was a little bit of suspense.
That's going to get the viewers right there. You're
three
right.
Boosters, 27 engines, even one off by a millimeter or two. The thing doesn't go straight up. It goes sideways. So this was really, a tough, amazing engineering feat, and they did it flawlessly. Now, as you know, SpaceX has a habit of saving the boosters. They always save the shuttle boosters. They would land in the ocean and a boat would come get them. But in this case, SpaceX likes those boosters to land, to stick the landing. And, man, there were three side boosters. The main engine did get lost at sea. It actually ditched on purpose because it wasn't going to be able to land safely on the platform. So it ditched. But here's the two coming down. This, to me, was the most breathtaking example of engineering I have ever seen in my life. They're landing autonomously, perfectly, and ready for reuse. And that was an important part of making space travel economical.
I mean, SpaceX is proving time and time again, because this is not the first time that they've done this, landed it so precisely.
Remember the early time, a lot of them fell over, blew up. I mean...
You're like, this is going to be a big challenge. But, I mean, they're really nailing it.
They're making it look too easy, frankly. They have a few more accidents. All right. So, by the way, Musk, brilliant marketer, right? Mm-hmm. He says, we need a payload for this test flight, right? We got to put something heavy in there. Normally you put concrete bricks or something. He said, I'm going to put my original Tesla Roadster, my car, in there with the Starman, a dummy in a space helmet. Not that one, although... There goes the Earth. We simulated. Man. This is a simulation for...
I was fooled there for a second.
There he is.
I mean, this doesn't look that much realer. Like, when I saw this video, what I was going to say is when I saw this for the first time on Tuesday, I didn't see the prep for this. I didn't see it happen.
I didn't know this was going to happen.
It was
in
like
a capsule, and the fairings fell off. I don't know how many people knew this was going to happen. There were cameras all around him, and then what's amazing is you see the Earth rise behind him, in front of him. Also, there's a couple of interesting points of reference. First of all, the Tesla screen, instead of having a Tesla logo, it says, don't panic.
Love it.
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Awesome. It's the cover of the book. And then above that, see, there's a little tiny Tesla toy with a little tiny Starman in it. I didn't know that till I read it later. That is brilliant marketing.
So what happens when an alien life form stumbles upon this flying vehicle and realizes it can have no conversation with the person that's sitting inside of it?
Maybe they'll plug into the stereo and they hear David Bowie's Space Oddity playing over and over.
I hope that's the way that we discover, life in the
aliens
universe.
Decide, hey, we really like this Bowie guy.
Hey,
he's good. So now it was in orbit around the Earth. It then got launched out of Earth orbit. It's going to Mars, right, John? It's going to go past Mars out to the asteroid belt. And then will it come back?
That's beautiful.
So the idea is it'll rotate around the sun. And eventually, where's it going to end up? Just around and around in the asteroid belt forever.
Yeah.
If it doesn't get pulverized by the asteroids.
It's just so surreal looking at a car flying in space.
Now, there is a little marketing.
I still kind of can't get over it.
Look at the T on the steering wheel. You kind of get this is pretty good marketing for Tesla. Really? A lot of jokes made about, the aliens discovering it.
Yep.
Then saying it's got to come back. It's looking for the supercharger. And, it's like V'ger. I don't know. I think there's a lot of fun in that one.
I love it.
In fact, somebody immediately went to the Wikipedia article and modified the top speed of the Tesla Roadster to 11 kilometers per second. So that's pretty good. That's really good.
That's great.
Isn't that a happy story?
I love it.
How can you not? How can you not feel good about that? Another happy story. The Winter Olympics are on. Have you watched them? Very hard to watch in 4K HDR, but if you have Dish, DirecTV, or Comcast, you might be able to watch, if you have an appropriate up-to-date hardware box, the new Comcast X1 up-to-date Dish or DirecTV. You can watch on your 4K screen. It'll be 24 hours delayed. If you want to watch live, you're going to see the 1080p picture at best from NBC, although it's being shot in some cases in 8K by OBS and NHK, 90 hours of 8K. 1,800 hours of streaming. You can watch the NBC Olympics app. And did you last night? And you could get this if the NBC Olympics app, download it, put it on your Apple TV.
Watching it on YouTube TV.
Or watch it on YouTube. Yeah, well, YouTube TV has it. So you can watch the tape delayed opening ceremonies, and you might see You fell asleep, you said.
So did I. I watched the march of everyone to the stands, and then that was about what I started.
After America, I didn't get to whatever the last one was. But if we had stayed tuned, we might have seen the Intel drones. Look at this. They did this at the Super Bowl with Lady Gaga last year, you may remember. Yeah, these are 1,218 autonomous drones. They're controlled by a computer. They're actually not completely autonomous. They have LED lights. They could do all sorts of shapes. Snowboarder. There was a dove. Unfortunately, they decided not to do it live during the opening ceremonies because of winds and the temperature. You know, freezing temperatures are bad for lithium-ion batteries. But they did record it the night before and were able to play it back along with the ceremonies. Look at that. Those are drones.
That is fascinating.
Those are drones.
That is crazy. And, I mean, it makes perfect sense, right, for a computer to be able for this. I'm sure this is a pretty menial task for a computer to orchestrate all of this. The drones are so precise in how they fly.
The funny thing is,
I have to imagine how brilliant and amazing it must be to be there looking up into the sky and seeing that kind of forming.
Really need
you know, it looks like a digital effect on the screen. What does it look like in
Scott Wilkinson was telling me that the Intel team did that at CES as well over the Bellagio fountains.
That's right.
Beautiful thing, but he told me that he stuck around afterwards. They had guys wade out into the fountains to pick up the dead drones because inevitably, in any display like this, a few drones don't make it.
Right. When you're in the thousands of drones flying in the sky, you have to imagine one or two of them is going to have a battery failure or something is going to happen.
All right, we're going to head to the news desk in just a second. I'm excited about this. The Apple HomePod. We'll talk about the ins, the outs. We'll give it a real listening test.
All right.
And I will give you my thoughts on whether you should buy it or not. But first, a word from our sponsor, WordPress.com. I love WordPress. WordPress fans since day one, practically. Matt Mullenweg and the great team at Automattic. I was using their software, running it on my own server. But when I discovered that I didn't have to have my own server, it was actually less expensive for me to use WordPress.com, let them host it, let them keep it up to date, secure. That's when I really went crazy. I love WordPress.com. Whether you're doing a blog for your small business, you don't need experience. You don't need to hire someone. WordPress.com guides you through the entire process from beginning to end, and they do all the technical stuff. So it's easy to get your site up and running. Hundreds of beautiful designs to choose from. You'll get built-in search engine optimization and social sharing. That means people who visit your site can share, can spread the word about what you're doing in their Facebook or Twitter feed. You get built-in search engine optimization, too. That's important. That way Google puts you up at the top where you belong. With a business plan, you get hundreds of plugins and themes. You can even bring your own. A great customer support team made up of WordPress experts, 24 hours a day, Monday through Friday, eager to help you. They're there on weekends, too. And plans start at just $4 a month. Come see why 29% of all websites run on WordPress. Get started with 15% off any new plan purchase. Go to WordPress.com/NSS to create your website and find the plan that's right for you. That's WordPress.com/NSS, 15% off your brand new website. We thank them so much for their support of the new screensavers. WordPress.com/NSS. All right. Now, I don't know. Should these guys all turned around? Should we have them? Okay, close your eyes. I don't want you guessing which speaker this is coming from. We have the Apple HomePod. You can see it's in this array. In fact, it's that beautiful black thing there. And we'll talk a little bit about what it's capable of. Apple is selling this as more as a speaker than a Siri companion. They're not really comparing it to the Amazon Echo. They're saying, yeah, you can use Siri to do Apple Music with it. But really, we see this as a new kind of speaker. I think they're talking about something called computational audio. The speaker itself has one upward-firing subwoofer. It's about, I don't know, 4 inches in diameter. And then around the bottom, 7 tweeters, which handle the high and mid-range. Wow. But they're all the way around. And what that means is, unlike most speakers where you want to sit kind of in the sweet spot at the apex of a triangle with the left and right speakers on your left and right, with a HomePod, you put it anywhere in the room, it adjusts to the room, and it gives you sound all around the room. That's at least their selling point. People are raving about the sound. I don't know if you've read the reviews of Neil Patel in The Verge, who said, I'm a stereo speaker fanatic. I think this sounds fantastic. But I thought, really, We got a musician, you, Jason Howell, with really good ears.
Yeah,
you
really
listen
good
to
eyes.
Speakers all the time. We have Seth, who's the birthday boy here, and he's a musician. We're going to put a blindfold on him. His family's here. We've got from Iowa. We've got, is it Ricardo?
Ricardo
from Iowa. So we've got a good panel of real people. We're wiring him up right now. And what we're going to do is we're going to play the same song on all of these. All right? Now, in most cases, the song will be coming from Spotify, and it'll be playing through Wi-Fi. So I'm not going to tell you what kinds of speakers we have here. I'm just going to give you a number. And I want you to, all of you, to listen to the sound, all of you in the studio. You at home, it's probably not going to sound very different. They'll all pretty much sound the same because of the streaming and the compression and all that. But you who are in the studio, what I'd like you to do is listen to this. I'll give you a number before I play the music, and you're going to hear six different devices. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different devices. And I want you to pick the best. Now, there is one ringer in here, which is probably, I think, going to sound better than anything else. So you'll know what that is. So I'm going to ask you to pick the best and then the second best.
Okay.
Because really, the ringer is at a price point well beyond the rest of these. All right? So we'll show you at home on the screen what you're hearing so that you know, I mean, for what it's worth, you know what you're hearing. You ready?
I'm ready.
I'm going to say the number. Remember which number you like best. Okay. I'll say it before and after. This is.
And remember the top two, right?
Yeah, I think it'll be pretty obvious
why
I'm going to say remember the
top
two.
Yeah, okay, I got you.
So this is number one.
Okay.
All right, and we're going to, by the way, we should mention, play Havana by Camila Cabello. This is speaker number one. And one of the. I'll stop talking.
Are you changing the volume?
I am. Okay. And let me pause this. And one of the reasons I'm doing that, and this is, of course, the reason why this is not a scientific test. We already know psychologically louder appears to sound better.
Yeah.
And if you were going to do this right, you'd do it in an anechoic chamber, and you would have sound pressure meter, and you'd make sure that each device was exactly the same level. Mm-hmm. We're not doing that. So
close, but not
quite. Keep listening. This is number one.
Okay.
All right, we're now moving to number two. This is speaker. Wow, that didn't work too well. All right, let me.
Okay.
This is number two.
A little bit richer.
It's maybe a little louder. Let me turn it down a little bit.
Yeah, there's a little more clarity, though.
Well, a little more clarity. All right.
Like a little bit of the haze has been lifted.
All right, we're going to move to number three now. This is on Spotify.
This is the third one?
This is number three.
Yeah, some nice low-end reach there.
Yeah, you're listening for low-end, you're listening for high-end. Also, one of the things Apple says is you're listening for spatiality and the ability to move around, which we're not giving you that. Capability.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like a single speaker versus a room
exactly,
that's being filled with sound.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This is now number four coming up here in a second. Let me stop this and then I'll connect. This is number four.
Okay. This is the screen I'm making home. One blank close range that feed. If it goes a million,
that's me. Okay, I'm going to pause this for a second. Okay. Now, we had a disqualification. We had one of the speaker systems, we had a little technical difficulty getting it to work. So we're not going to have a number five. I apologize. We're going to go straight to number six. This is number six now.
Wait for the kind of beat to kick in a little bit.
Turning that up. It's as loud as I can get it, but.
And this is six. Okay.
All right, now I'm going to finally.
Okay.
We're going to go to number 7. And if I can get to number 7, it will all be good.
All right. I get the feeling that that's the ringer.
That's the ringer. Very good. That was about two or three times the cost of the other ones.
All right.
So you've heard all 7 of them. You're right. That was the ringer. And what I did is that was a more expensive, almost home stereo system.
Right.
So I wanted to at least compare it to that. So of the 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, and 7.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously 7 got louder, but I couldn't necessarily tell if it was my favorite. I would probably say that 3 sounded the best to me.
Number 3, okay.
Yeah.
How about out there? Seth, what do you think?
I like 6 the best. It was pretty even.
Six
I don't like the
one.
Overpowering
yeah.
bass.
Yeah, yeah, 6. How about the rest of you?
I'm torn between 3 and 6.
Ricardo said three and six.
3 and 6 is what I had, yeah.
And you like number 4. Okay, that's Gracia.
Two.
And number 2. So we have a pretty broad range here. Okay, you can take out your blindfold,
I mean,
Seth
seriously,
and Jason. So number 1, nobody liked. And that's the $200 Harman Kardon Invoke. That's using Cortana. And Harman Kardon, a well-known speaker manufacturer,
yeah.
I thought that this would have a shot.
I honestly thought it would too.
But it didn't. Number 2 was the kind of the most comparable, at least in size,
okay,
to the HomePod. This is the Sonos One. This is the one that has Alexa in it. And that Sonos, very cleverly, is marketing 2 for 1. For the same price as a HomePod, you can get 2 of these. We're only playing 1. But a lot of people thought it sounded pretty good. Yeah.
And you've got a really nice kind of
that's the Sonos One, $349 for a pair. You liked the Google Max.
Well, no. Now, I was between the 6 and the 3. 6 is what I chose as my top.
You did choose, which is the HomePod.
3 was the second.
But it was comparable.
Yeah, I thought they were pretty
comparable. Seth liked the 3, right?
Not 6.
Oh, you liked the 6? Now, one reason I think Seth might have been a good test for this is because Seth is not on axis. You're in front of the speaker.
Well, no,
Seth,
right.
And the idea with the HomePod is that no matter where you are in the room, it should sound pretty good. And I think it did do that.
Yeah, actually. You know what? I'm sorry I got twisted around. My first pick was 3. My backup was 6.
Yeah.
So I'm very, very intrigued by the fact that those are the two kind of top. Those would have been the two top runners.
Now, this is $50 more. It's $399. But it has the assistant in it, and it has one thing that the HomePod does not have. It plays a broad range of music. In fact, pretty much anything if you include Google Cast in this.
Mm.
And that is something the HomePod does not do. It is basically an AirPlay device and an iTunes, you know, an Apple Music device. It is really an Apple ecosystem device. Number 4 was kind of a ringer. It was an Amazon Echo. But it was an Echo with the best speaker, at least at that price point. It was the Echo Show. That's only $179, but it actually was pretty. Sounded pretty good, right? Yeah, a couple of you picked number 4, but number 6 was the HomePod, and of course the ringer. Number 7 was a full size JBL Authentics. They don't even sell this anymore. It's about $1,000. One reason I like the Authentics is because it also supports AirPlay, so I can. None of these were playing Bluetooth, by the way.
Right.
Bluetooth really wouldn't have been a fair test, would it? Because Bluetooth quality, audio quality, is much lower than a Wi-Fi play. And one thing that perhaps makes the JBL even a little bit better is you can connect a Chromecast audio via optical to it. It has optical in, it has phono in, Bluetooth and AirPlay. So this thing is the most flexible. Mm-hmm. It also has stereo. It's the only one that had 2 speakers. That gives it a little bit more of an advantage.
Well,
as
the Google Home has the two, but
yeah,
it's
but not much separation.
Spread. Yeah,
right?
The spread.
What's
is
interesting
not as deep.
Is the HomePod isn't stereo, and it isn't intended to be stereo. Even if you had multiple HomePods, they don't pair as stereo pairs. They merely adjust for the other HomePods in the room and attempt to fill the sound in the room. I thought the ambience was pretty good on this, but I think one thing that this test shows is it's not head and shoulders above everything else out there, is it?
Mm-mm.
And that's how Apple wants to position it. In fact, I think that's part of the problem with this. Apple's saying, no, no, don't think of it as a Siri device. It's not a competitor to the Amazon Echo. It's a speaker. When they brought the press in for briefings, they took them into the special design rooms and showed them all the speaker experts they brought in to do this. But there's a problem. There's a something called physics. When a speaker is this size, mm-hmm. it just can't be as rich and full of a sound. You don't have a 4-inch woofer is not going to have the same throw as a subwoofer.
Yeah.
Frankly, when I put this next to my home stereo, it wasn't even close.
Right.
This sounded thin and light compared to a real stereo with a sub and good stereo separation. We didn't do that here.
And if Apple's bringing, people into a specially set up room,
wow, that sounds great.
I mean, there's no other sound in there except for this thing. That's the perfect environment for it. Yeah, I mean, in my head, it was definitely between 3 and 6.
It was in there.
Had I thought to, ask for a replay of my two tops.
We could have done that.
I may have selected differently. But they were pretty darn close.
I think it sounds very good. I remember we only tried one kind of music.
Yeah.
Yesterday I spent a lot of time listening to classical rock and roll. It sounds best with modern pop music. I would expect it to.
Absolutely.
That's what they're going to tune it for.
Yep.
Classical, it's a little thin. Actually, all of these would be. You really need a good stereo system, I think, mm-hmm. to hear the broad dynamic range of good classical music. And I guess that's what I would say is I want to make sure people don't buy this thinking, I'm getting the last stereo speaker I'll never need to buy. Mm-hmm. Apple's almost positioning it that way. Like, these are so good with computational audio. This is a whole new way of thinking about speakers. And it just isn't. Now, maybe if Apple makes a broader range, some bigger ones, a subwoofer, things like that, it could be. I think it's mm-hmm. very interesting. But right now, if you love music, I don't know why you wouldn't spend a little more money, for crying out loud. Get a stereo system, for crying out loud.
Yeah, but there's something to be said for the super straightforward, super easy. I mean, even the size of something like this.
Easiest to set up, but it really is only for people in the Apple ecosystem.
Absolutely.
You have to have an Apple device to set it up, an iPad or an iPhone. You can't set it up any other way. It only plays Apple Music. So if you're a Spotify subscriber, you're out of luck.
Yeah, that's no good.
Until
that's
later.
No good short term. They're going to add that feature, that functionality.
They say they're going to add that. They're going to add stereo pairs and multi-room music.
Yeah.
All of these will do multi-room music. This one won't yet. So I think it's important to put this in perspective. It's not bad. It's a good speaker.
It sounds not good. As a speaker, it sounds good.
Yeah, it's not reinventing stereo audio.
Right.
The hyperbole aside, I think it does Siri. If you're in the Apple ecosystem, if you are an Apple lover, this is a good choice, mm-hmm. especially for somewhere like a kitchen or a bathroom or somewhere where you're not going to be. You're going to be moving around.
Right.
If you want to listen to great music in the living room, for crying out loud, get a stereo.
And when I had the Google Home Max, that's where we had ours, was in the living room.
Yeah.
And I felt like that was perfect to fill the space in our living room.
Right.
I felt like it had the depth of sound that was better, actually, than the setup that we had in there already. I was super impressed with it. I'd be curious, in an environment that I'm very familiar with, to know the difference between that. Because, as you say, some of these speakers are doing a lot of computational stuff to improve the sound. But how much is that really doing? Every space is a little different. And here, this is a cavern in here, so it's hard to fill this space.
This is a tough space to fill, absolutely.
But I'm sure there are rooms where the HomePod is going to excel, just based on its sheer design.
I think it's a good product. I don't think it's a great product. I don't think it's what Apple's kind of positioning it as, is the ultimate speaker system.
Right.
If you live in the Apple ecosystem, I do like it that you can hit it on the head and shut
Bonk.
up. All right, somebody wanted to hear. Let me see if I can put a little
thump into it.
This. Yeah, somebody wanted to hear some more thump here.
All right.
Let me see if
I mean, what you just played, that sounded pretty good.
It's it does the high end and mid range very well.
Yeah.
And you know what else it's great for? If you listen to voice, if you listen to books or mm-hmm. spoken word, and if you have an iPhone, by the way, you can AirPlay anything to it. So you can listen to your audiobooks on it from your iPhone and your iPad. The human voice range is perfect. Mm-hmm. Sounds as good as any big stereo system because of where this sits in that range.
Leo Laporte is sitting in your kitchen.
I sound very good on it. So there you go. Price range, it's kind of on the high end. The only thing that was more expensive is the Google Home Max, and of course this big boy down here.
Yeah.
For $50 more, the Home Max. And you know what? I think we could say it probably beat the Home Max, or it was close enough.
I feel like they were very close.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, in my own home testing, I thought the HomePod sounded better than the Google Home. But it was close enough. And as you'd expect, I mean, this thing has a little bit bigger mm-hmm. speakers, a little more substance to it.
Yeah.
So there you have it. If you want more features, you're going to be looking elsewhere. If you're an Apple lover and you want an AirPlay, a great AirPlay device, it's not for home theater. Don't try to attach it to your Apple TV
right.
or your TV system. It really isn't for that. It's beautiful. It's got the soft fabric.
One of the first things that I heard from these reviews was how great the power cable
that's,
was.
You know what? That's like, a really? Sign you're talking to an Apple-addled person. It is.
All power cables should be like this power cable.
Here's what I don't like, and I wish they'd mentioned this. It's wired in. It's what we call normaled into the device. That means if the cable gets frayed, you have to bring the whole darn thing in.
I don't like that.
Able
to just drop a new one in there if I need to.
I'm not sure why Apple did that, but it probably has something to do with keeping people locked into the ecosystem.
Yep.
You can. Somebody says you can plug it out. Should I pull on it?
Oh, no.
I don't think it comes out. I don't think that. I'm not pulling on that.
I'm a little scared, to be honest.
By the way, no Bluetooth at all on the HomePod.
Seriously?
So if you wanted to use it as a Bluetooth speaker or you wanted to use it for a phone speaker, can't do it.
It really does feel kind of limited. I mean,
it's extremely
great, but from a functionality standpoint, I mean, you get so much. And that's, I mean, one of the big differences, and we talk about it all the time, is Siri versus other assistants. Like, these speakers largely right now are built around A, being speakers, but B, being very useful from a computational sense. I feel like the Google Home ecosystem really delivers on that promise.
Much more so. You can control your TV set with it. There's so much
and it
more
has Bluetooth. Like it's way more flexible in that regard. It's got an eighth inch plug on the back, so you can go analog with it into it as well.
Yeah.
You know, you're limited in those regards on Apple's product here.
We're going to play the guitar in just a little bit. Father Robert Ballester is going to show you how to use Nmap. And coming up, the debate, the great Apple.
Dun, dun, dun.
Google Switch continues.
Right.
But first, a word from our sponsor, the folks at From Hidden Behind a Speaker Wall here. I feel like Phil Spector in my wall of sound. Our show today brought to you by FreshBooks. Did you know that 44 million people have a second job?
Wow.
Yeah, you have a second job.
Well,
yellow gold.
I mean, I guess. I don't consider that a job.
Well,
it's fun.
If you ever have to send invoices, if you've got a side hustle, so to speak, a passion project, a source of extra income, make sure you're on the right track with FreshBooks Cloud Accounting Software. Their intuitive dashboard gives you quick access to your spending, outstanding balances, total profit, and other accounting reports. You'll know how you're doing at any given moment, and you'll be ahead of the game during the tax season. It's coming. This year you're going to say, gosh, I wish I used FreshBooks. But next year, my friend, you could say, thank goodness I used FreshBooks. And, of course, with FreshBooks, as always, you can send them professional-looking invoices in seconds. Save time accepting credit cards online. You'll get paid an average of twice as fast, by the way, because your clients can just push a button that says, pay, pay. You don't have to chase them for payments. You don't have to bring checks to the bank and wait in line. You can accept credit card payments directly from your invoice, even if you don't have a merchant account. They set it all up for you. That is nice. See what invoices have been sent, which have been viewed, which have been paid, as well as overdue and outstanding invoice totals. You can create proposals. That's something brand new. They're always adding features with rich text content, images, customizable sections, and more. Know what you did and when you did it so you never leave money on the table again. FreshBooks makes it easy to bill for time by client and by specific project. They automatically connect to your bank account and update expenses daily. You can take a picture of a receipt. It's really simple. With your phone, upload it, let FreshBooks do the rest. From payment reminders to late fees, you can automate as much or as little as you'd like to so you can get back to doing what you love, your side hustle. With FreshBooks, you'll be ready, too. When tax time comes along, you'll be set up for success when you decide to turn that side hustle into a full-time gig. Try FreshBooks free for 30 days at FreshBooks.com/NSS. Don't forget to put the new screensavers in the how did you hear about us section. FreshBooks, FreshBooks.com/NSS, and we thank FreshBooks for their support.
That's right. Thank you, FreshBooks.
I want to see this one.
All right, so we will get to the guitar that is basically a big guitar that you can dock your iPhone into. And a few more features. We'll get to that in a second. But right now, Megan and I did a little thing where we compared the Apple Watch to Android Wear watches, and we put it into kind of the modified high school debate format. Neither of us have ever done debate, by the way. Anyways, you'll realize that when you watch. Here it goes.
Welcome to the first annual high school debate competition, Android Watch versus Apple Watch.
Versus Apple Watch Series 3. Megan and I, neither of us have an actual history in any sort of debate class. I highly respect high school debate class, mm-hmm. but I highly fear it too.
So. Yes. So we are going to follow our own high school debate rules. And yes. As is often the case with debate, you are given, you have to prove something that you don't necessarily believe. For example, Android Watch is superior to Apple Watch.
Or Apple Watch, in my case, is superior to Android Watch. So we each get 60 seconds and then we get a 30 second rebuttal at the end of that. That's what we're going to do.
Right. Okay. Right? I'll start.
All right. You're up.
Android Watch is superior to Apple Watch. Go. The Android Watch is round, as God intended watches. They should be round. It's also very heavy and sturdy. You can see that I'm not wearing it right now because I'm not doing a workout. And when I do wear it, it is a workout in itself because it is so heavy. Did I mention how heavy it was? It's very large also, so it makes the rest of my body look smaller, so I don't even have to exercise. Apps, so many apps on this device, and you can just scroll through them, and it's great. And I'm scrolling and seeing all of my notifications. It has fitness apps on there, and I can do a fit workout and start a workout. And it has many more workouts than the Apple Watch. Look at all those other workouts. You're limited with the Apple Watch. Can you play Australian football while wearing the Apple Watch? You can, but you won't know how many calories you're burning. The battery life. The battery life can sometimes last up to 3 hours, sometimes 4, 5. You can see it's holding steady at 8% now at 2 in the afternoon. That's pretty good for a tiny computer you wear on your wrist. The price also...
Time.
Lots.
Time.
It's cheaper.
That was really... Oh, man. Okay. All right. We'll accept that. Hold on. I need to add that to my notes.
Okay.
I was scribbling. I got a whole page worth of notes somehow on that, which means that I can't read my notes for my topic, which involves the Apple Watch Series 3. I'm going to tell you why this is the most amazing watch in the history of the galaxy. Ready, set, go. The Apple Watch Series 3, as you can see, represents a shape and form factor we are very used to. It's the same form factor as our phone. Isn't that amazing? We'll go ahead and dismiss that. As you can see, notifications appear on the screen as they come through. I don't have to do anything to make that happen. It happens through magic from my iPhone that's connected. Apps. I get this wonderful honeycomb list. I can also do the vertical list, but why when you've got a honeycomb list? That's just so enticing and so intriguing. The assistant, it's got Siri and next. Watch faces, no third-party watch faces, though I can get third-party customizations to the existing watch faces in the way of complications. Battery life, the battery life on here is great. It's a wireless battery charger. I just drop it on, but I don't need to because it lasts all day for multiple days in a row. And I can take phone calls on here, although I never do, though I did talk to you and it sounded okay, Megan. That is the Apple Watch Series 3. Oh my God. That was really difficult. Okay. So that was 60 seconds.
Okay.
Now what happens?
Now 30 seconds.
30 second rebuttal. So you've got to knock down all the good things I said about my watch. I've got to knock down all the good things you said about yours.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going first?
I'm ready.
All right.
Go. Jason mentioned the fact that you had third-party complications on the Apple Watch, but I think third-party faces are much superior. So look at all those faces I can choose from. Really, and add more watch faces. I just go online. There's so many different watch faces. Really, the choices are pretty much endless. You can say, get more watch faces. You cannot do that on the Apple Watch. You can't. There's no store for third-party Apple Watch faces, and everyone wants third-party Apple Watch faces. Also, did I mention that it can be cheaper? It depends on which watch.
I love that you spent so much time on the third-party watch faces. It kept you from knocking down any of my other arguments. Okay, gotta crack the neck here. I'm ready. Are you ready for... Oh, wait, why am I holding out my watch? This is about you and your series of watches here. 30 seconds to knock down your arguments. Ready? And go, yeah, sure, you know, you've got all these apps and fitness and everything, you know, on a vertical list, but it just looks so bland. It's so blasé. You've got three different watches there, and the UI on them all looks the same across all of them. There's nothing different or exciting about it. And by the way, Megan, who plays Australian football, really? Nobody plays it. That's who. 3 to 5 hours of battery life is really great if the day was 3 to 5 hours long. Talk about 24 hours. That's what I get here. Okay.
All right. So now I think all you Australians out there, first of all.
Sorry.
Stick with me.
Sorry,
I apologize. Producers.
I forget that you're watching.
All right, now let's do a little debrief, a little
post-mortem.
Post-mortem. Mm-hmm. How did you feel about our debate?
I thought our debate was pretty good. I feel like a minute to a minute and a half is hardly enough time to really dive into the details. But I don't know, when you get to the end of the day and you actually take a look at where Android Wear devices have come over the course of however many years, what, 3-4 years now? Apple Watch has been around almost that amount of time. I think Android Wear was kind of there beforehand. It really feels like Apple supports the Apple Watch a little more so than Google seems to be doing with Android Wear. It seems to be coming kind of a thing of the past on Android on the side of things versus Apple, you know, still very dedicated to their Apple Watch. What do you think?
I think I am, as we know, an Apple fan, but I will admit that the Pixel phone is a really great phone. I'm not willing to admit that the Android Watch and any Android Wear watch that I've tried is great. I just can't. The battery life on all of these is really short. And the apps that you can download aren't optimized, so then it, you know, sucks up all the battery life. I really do prefer a rectangular watch, not the round watch. I think that you don't wear a watch, so mm-hmm. you're hard to say, but I know Flo has a hybrid watch, which is an Android watch and a regular watch, I guess, but she likes it. But I don't know anyone else who regularly uses an Android watch.
Yeah, and I think, you know, a big component of this is always comes down to what is the platform that you use. You are an iPhone user when we aren't doing this crazy switch. And so it makes sense that most iPhone users are probably going to get the Apple Watch because it's so tied in. You can do that with Android Wear. And that's actually one, you know, key factor about Android Wear is that it is cross-platform to a certain degree. The Apple Watch is not. But most iOS users are probably going to get an Apple Wear watch or Apple Watch. Apple Wear is like when Android and iOS start converging. That's never going to happen.
Yeah, Apple Wear is not a thing. All right, now I think we shake hands. That's
all right.
A good debate.
Until the next debate.
Yeah. Woo! Look at that.
Oh, sorry.
You got your axe, man.
That's next. Let me turn it down.
What do you think?
Of this?
We'll talk about that in a second, but of this whole switch thing. You ever do that again?
Well, I think apparently we do it every year.
Oh, you're stuck, huh?
You know, it was Megan's idea to do it again. I was like, oh, okay, well, I guess so. Because, you know, the iPhone 10 is different than
Are you surviving with an iPhone?
Yeah, but
I thought it was interesting that you were forced to advocate for it.
Well, that's been the fun of the Switch is in all of these kind of this versus that,
right?
Kind of taking the opposite view.
Yeah.
And actually, it's been really beneficial because it's very easy, at least I can speak from my own personal experience, very easy to kind of fall into the, yeah, but Android does it better thing. And the reality is they both do great things. They do them in different facets, and some are, you know, one is better at one thing, might not be so good at that, you know, compared to the other, but it has its pros and its cons.
Right.
And I mean I'm surviving fine. Like I'm using it, I'm just not as entertained or excited to dive into the iOS.
But for instance,
experience.
This product only works with an iOS device. Would you if you had the choice use both? That's what I do.
Well, I guess in a certain way I kind of am because I still do
secretly,
Android stuff here.
You got a little Android on the side, don't
this
you?
This is my my side.
That's what I thought.
My side gig is the OnePlus 5T. Well, I mean, you know, I do an Android show, right? So
have
I have to have an Android device, but I don't carry this around with me. And to be honest, I don't really want to carry around two devices. That's overwhelming to me. I'd rather just have one device. I'm just a little less than inspired when I'm using iOS, and I feel more inspired on Android, and maybe that's just because that's what I'm used to.
I feel schizo.
On what?
Because I use them both.
Because you use them both. Exactly. I'm trying to be less schizo in my life.
That debate we just saw, I have that in my head. That's terrible. All right. It's time for the Fusion guitar.
Yeah.
This is, first of all, it's a little clunky looking. It's a very thick body. Is this, tell me about this.
What is this? Yes, it's a very interesting, unique looking guitar. This is, so it's not inexpensive. It's a $999 guitar, right around
$1,000. Is it decent as a guitar?
Yeah, that's kind of, I think, the big question here, right? If you're going to buy a guitar, and especially if you're going to pay $1,000 for it, you want it to be, first and foremost, a good guitar. And then there are the other things that you can do.
You can get a Gibson SG for less than that.
Yeah, you can get some really nice guitars for a grand.
Yeah.
And this can perform as a straight-up guitar. If you see underneath here, you've got some quarter-inch outs. One of these is actually sending the audio that you get from the iPhone, which I'll talk about in a second.
Oh, that's interesting.
Another one is just sending a straight-up output from the pickups that you have on a guitar, like any other guitar. So if I was a gigging musician and I wanted a guitar that I could take on stage, I could do this and not be locked into the iPhone integration. However, the iPhone integration is what makes it unique.
Yeah, your friends might laugh at you.
It's a little... Yeah, it's kind of chunky, right? Yeah. It's not the most beautiful guitar in the world, let's just say that. Yeah. But it is kind of interesting what they're doing here. You can see right up at the top here, this is an iPhone 6 Plus.
Oh, that's wild.
And it's basically docks right into the guitar. The guitar has an onboard battery that lasts 4 to 6 hours, depending.
Oh, that's interesting.
It has an amplifier in here and these front-facing firing speakers that you see here.
Oh, you don't even need an amp.
Exactly.
Oh.
That's the beauty of it. There's an amp in here with some speakers, another speaker that actually fires up at you while you're playing.
Wow.
And so what it allows you to do is kind of tap into the rich ecosystem the app ecosystem that iOS has around music making products.
So you don't have to use their app. You could use other apps.
They actually don't have an app. You're using third-party apps entirely. So Amplitude, GarageBand, if you wanted to do multi-track guitar or recording.
You could record to the phone.
Yeah, you can do it all through here. So if I had GarageBand going, I could record me noodling on the guitar and then do another take over it onto another track. And it's all happening in the phone that's docked into the guitar.
Now I get the name. It's a Fusion.
It's a Fusion, exactly. So you can see two different sets of pickups, two humbucker pickups. You can actually kind of determine whether they are done in a single coil tone or in a series by pushing and pulling this knob. So you've got a little bit of flexibility as far as the sound and kind of cleaning up the sound from the humbucker pickups. It uses traditional strings. So, and that I'm really happy to hear, because when I first heard of this, I was like, am I going to have to get a separate style or type of strings? I mean, it's a normal guitar. It's just that it happens to have an amplifier inside instead of needing one outside.
So you put your strings on it.
So you can put whatever strings you want, you know, have it set up properly. I have noticed, to your question, is it a good guitar? Like, it sounds pretty good, but I get into some... That sounds a little bit of detuned to me, a little bit out of tune on some of the strings. I would need to probably either set this up myself or take it into a guitar shop and have them set it up before I would know exactly to what quality the guitar itself is. But am I playing around with it? Like, I feel like the action is good. I feel like it's a pretty decent guitar.
And you can have a variety of sounds come out of it because you've got your own little amp set up there.
Yeah, and I might have problems
right
now. Will
it work with an iPhone 10? Do you have to have...
There we go. Okay, so that is a challenge. So what you can see actually laid out here... Oh, sorry.
Oh, it even does feedback.
Yeah, right, because the speaker's right there, right? So you can actually feedback super easy.
So
which
iPod,
is really nice for certain types of guitar.
You don't have to have a phone. You can use an iPod Touch with it.
Yes.
iPhone 6.
It supports a really nice selection of iPhones. However, it doesn't support the iPhone 10 yet. They're working on one of these plates to fit the iPhone 10.
Okay.
So I'm actually borrowing producer Jerry Wagley's iPhone 6 Plus that has the screen disease, by the way.
I don't see a 7 in here.
7, if I remember correctly.
Will that work with the 6?
One of the other ones, yes.
It work with a 6.
Yeah,
all
but
right.
I mean, iPod Touch. You could even get an iPod Touch and throw that in there and have it work. And I don't know, like, it's got a nice bit of flexibility. When I think about what you can do with this or why you might want it, you know, if you're a busker, let's say, and right, you don't want to be locked into an right. acoustic guitar for, you know.
Carry that right on the subway.
Yep, and annoy everybody.
Yep.
You're not locked into a certain style.
Right.
You can play different styles. Really great for practice because, as you can see on the bottom, there's also a headphone jack.
Now, you said it's got a big old battery in there. That's going to have to add to the weight of it.
It does. It's a little heavy. That's definitely one of the downsides is that it's got a little bit of bulk, a little bit of weight.
Robbie Robertson for the band's last performance, The Last Waltz, had his guitar bronzed. And he said, I regret that to this day because it was so heavy. It was weighing on him the whole time. A heavy guitar is not great for a long time playing.
Yeah, for longevity and whatever. I mean, I tend to play a lot when I'm just sitting down anyways. I don't play live. Standing here with a guitar strapped over my shoulder feels weird to me, to be completely honest.
Okay, good.
So it wouldn't bother me. But if you're actually intending to be doing a lot of gigging and that sort of stuff with this, it's something to consider.
Yeah.
It also looks a little kind of stubby. It's kind of got a smaller kind of form factor to it up here. The neck is normal size and feels fine, but there's a little bit of a compact quality to it.
And
I think that makes it more portable.
Does it get? I mean, could I play in Union Square in San Francisco and annoy the pigeons?
Yeah, I don't know if you're going to annoy the pigeons.
Feedback.
Yeah, the feedback comes in really handy. It gets loud enough for you and for, I think, people in your general vicinity. Yeah. But you're not playing Times Square with this.
Pair it to a HomePod.
Yeah. The HomePod's probably going to blow it away. But, I mean, it's unique in that it does what it does, right? Like, I've never seen a guitar with a built-in amplifier and speaker into it. It makes it look kind of funny, but it's cool that it exists.
It might be you could AirPlay that phone into a HomePod and put the HomePod out in front of you. I'm serious. I mean,
I don't know why you couldn't, to be honest.
Wow.
I wonder if you did that, if it would also simultaneously play through here as well and be in sync and all that. But, so it's interesting. A 20-watt amp, by the way. So to give you
that's
a general
hefty.
Sense of how much sound you're going to get out of this, depending also on the patch that you're using in the software. And that's a big part of its flexibility is that it really does work with any apps. So if you want to use a guitar learning app, one of those, what is it called? Musician is one of those. I mean, there's a ton of them on iOS that actually teach you how to play guitar.
Guitar Pro, Guitar Masterclass, Guitar Toolkit, Jamit, all of those.
It'll just integrate it into the guitar itself.
Nice.
So as long as you keep the battery charged, you're good to go.
Yeah. it feels like it wouldn't be your only guitar.
No. I don't feel like it would be. Maybe it'll be your first guitar, though.
Do these
Maybe
guys make other guitars? Is this their first guitar?
This is, as far as I could tell, this is their first guitar.
Yeah, it's got a maple neck. I didn't realize that's got a wood neck. That's nice.
It feels really nice. It's cool. I think one of the potential drawbacks for this sort of an approach with something like a guitar is you're relying that this type of technology, this phone technology, is going to exist in this sort of format going forward.
10 years from now, that may be an obsolete. That guitar, you may not have anything you could put in there.
Absolutely. Yeah. You might have to like take one of your old phones and just that is your guitar phone. You know what I mean? Because at some point they might not.
My guitar phone.
Which is
I hope it keeps working.
Yeah, exactly. What are the long-term ramifications of docking your phone into the guitar? We don't really know, and that makes me a little hesitant.
It sounds like it's a specialty product.
Absolutely.
And for some people, it'll be really cool to have.
Yeah.
I can see, Street Busker's a good example.
Yeah.
Not that they have $900 to blow on a guitar, but I could see that you could play all kinds of stuff. You could have your accompaniment playing through there.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be kind of fun.
Yeah.
Can you do Jimi Hendrix?
No.
Jerry Garcia.
Let me see here.
Is there a Jimi Hendrix setting?
There is, but I...
That's it. You found it. Nice. Let's hear the national anthem. Oh, I love it. Yeah. Set it on fire. Oh, don't set it on fire.
Okay. All right. No, I'm not going to set this on fire. I'm not sure what the speakers would do. But anyways, that's the Fusion guitar, and it's fun. It's definitely specialty. But I know it solves some people's, you know, somebody out there, it solves their problem.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. Well, we've been keeping Stu on hold for quite a while. We're going to get to you, Stu. Don't go anywhere. He's drawing a picture of me as the Catwoman. We'll get to that in a moment. But first, a word from our sponsor, Rocket Mortgage. Man, have you watched the interest rates? They're starting to climb.
They are.
Time for a refi. You want to lock in those low interest rates in your home, or maybe you're ready to buy a new home. Now would be a good time. But I got to tell you, the home loan process with most other people is not great. You go to a bank. The guy shows off his mortgage calculator. He goes through rates. He says, I think I got one for you. It feels like he's going like that one. And then you're not even done. You go home and you have homework. You've got to go to the attic and get your pay stubs. You've got to go to the basement and find your bank statements from 2014. You've got to call the bank and say, you have my bank statements from 2010. You've got to send them all this paperwork. Last time we bought a house about 4 years ago, it didn't end. It was with a big bank, and it didn't end. They said, now we need this. Now we need that. Wait a minute. There's a better way. Quicken Loans, the best lender in the country, number one in customer satisfaction for 8 years running in mortgage approval, for 4 years running in mortgage servicing. They are truly loved. And now geeks are going to love me even better because they've come up with something new called Rocket Mortgage. It's an entirely online mortgage approval process. That means you can do it literally at an open house on your phone. It just takes a few minutes. All you have to do is go to rocketmortgage.com/NSS, answer a few easy questions. They'll crunch the numbers. You don't have to worry. You don't have to go to the attic because they have relationship with all the financial institutions. They get everything they need with your permission to crunch the numbers and based on your income, your assets, and your credit, offer you a home loan that's right for you. You choose the down payment. You choose the term. You choose the rate. And then you get approved. And all of that just took a few minutes. So fast you could do it at an open house. RocketMortgage.com/NSS. Look, nobody can pay cash for a house. You're going to get a loan. Why not get it from the best? Quicken Loans. And in the best way, Rocket Mortgage. You'll apply simply. You'll understand fully. You'll mortgage confidently. And by the way, they have excellent rates for refis too. RocketMortgage.com/NSS. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. And MLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. RocketMortgage.com/NSS for new screensavers. RocketMortgage.com/NSS. Equal housing lender. And we thank them for their support of the new screensavers. Now it's time for a call for help. Yeah! On the line from beautiful Madisonville, Kentucky, the very patient Stu. Hi, Stu!
Hi, Stu.
Hey, Leo.
You thought I was joking. He's a Batman fan. Look at that blanket behind you. That's awesome.
A handmade baby girl.
Oh, no. Really? Nice. And you did the drawing of the Joker over your right shoulder there?
That's my Joker from the Batman animated series.
Yes.
Nice.
Well, where's my Catwoman? You got to do a Catwoman. All right. What can we do for you, Stu?
Oh, wait a minute.
Oh, he did it! Oh, my God! Oh, my God! Oh, oh, oh! Very, very nice, Stu. I'm impressed. We really did keep you on hold a long time, didn't we? What can we do
this
for you?
This is my second time on the screensavers. I was on the old screensavers.
Oh, no kidding.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
With me and Patrick or me and Kate?
Patrick Norton. I made Norton actually blush on camera.
What did you say?
I said, when you introduced me, I said, "What's up?"
That's how long ago
because that
was
a thing. Yes,
that was a thing back then. Well, I wish I'd answered. Next time you call, I'm doing that to you. Okay.
Yeah, all right, all right.
What's up? What can we do for you, Stu?
Well, I took Flo, yours and Mr. Jason's advice, and we upgraded my wife's phone for Christmas. We got our Motorola G5.
Nice.
And got it on sale, which is even better. But now we have our old Note 2. And I thought, you know, I've always wanted to put something else on a phone. Now, I do IT for a living, so loading Linux or Windows is not a big deal, right, anymore. But I've never done it on a phone. And I thought I would use the Note 2 and put something non-Google, non-Apple on the phone. And I come across Elo, which is from our good friend, Mr. Duval, our Mandrake's Linux guy. Never done it before and just want to know how to do it and do it right the first time.
This is interesting. I didn't even know there were non-Android operating systems for phones besides, I guess there was, I knew there was an Ubuntu phone. Mm-hmm. So Elo, have you looked at that?
Elo, like I looked into it. It's an alternative privacy-focused mobile OS. It's actually based on open source Lineage OS, which is an Android distribution.
Yeah, I know Lineage.
So it is based on Android, but you know, there's all sorts of ROMs out there, and this would just be another ROM, but with a obvious focus on not, you know, being super reliant on the Google services and everything.
That's the key, right? If you want privacy, you don't want any Google in there. You don't want Google services, Google Play Store, any of that stuff.
I couldn't find anything on the Elo site that talked about when it was actually going to be released, because it was an Indiegogo campaign, right? A Kickstarter, Indiegogo.
Yeah.
And so it funded January 30th of this year. But we don't really know when you're going to get those files. I have to imagine when they actually, you know, start distributing this, they're going to give you instructions on how to update your phones if you do so choose to do that. Did you get the phone, or are you just getting the OS?
Oh, well, the phone was left over from, you know, the upgrade, right?
She's got the Note. He's got the Note 2.
Okay.
It's a nice phone. It, you know, I mean, I don't know if it'll run on it. That's only issue.
That is a curiosity is whether the Note 2 is too old for it.
Well, the Lineage OS has a build.
Okay. All right. That's a good sign.
Note 2.
Yeah. Now, and you also mentioned Una OS, which when I was looking around, it's also another privacy-focused operating system. They've actually deprecated third-party installations. So I think they've kind of gone all in on providing their operating system on some sort of licensed device down the line and not necessarily offering it to anyone that wants to install it on devices. At least I found a download page and it said, we've decided to deprecate this. So you won't be able to install that. But getting to kind of the root of your question, have you ever rooted or ROMed an Android or handset like this before? Have you ever gone through that process?
Not Android. Did an iPhone, which is...
Very different. Jailbreaking an iPhone is a very different thing. I would start at the XDA developers.
Absolutely. Yeah. XDA developers is your friend. If you go there, I mean, this is a community. It's a forum. It's a number of things, but there's all sorts of information per device. So you can go to the Galaxy Note 2 landing page in XDA, and it's going to have different categories of things that will allow you to open up the capabilities of even these really old devices. And that's kind of the beauty of rooting and then ROMing your devices, is that we all have, you know, we have these old devices, but what can you do with them anymore? They're not supported anymore. However, you know, people like those contributing to XDA will give you all the information that you need to actually do that. And in the case of something like this, actually installing an operating system onto a device and completely wiping out the Android that once existed there, you're going to need to root the device in order to gain root access, which would allow you to then install the ROM of your choice. And XDA has the information that you need on there. I can touch on it real quick here to give you a general sense, but the real trick of it is that each device has its own specific requirements. You know, at its core, rooting a device is really based on vulnerabilities, backdoors, access that people aren't supposed to have into their devices generally. So, you know, the hacking community, the ROMing community, they've spent a lot of time on a per-device basis breaking it apart and saying, this is the specific way for this device to actually get this access. And the only way that you really know that is to kind of do some of this research. And XDA is a great place to do that.
Yeah, I don't know if you noticed, I found a page that said dual boot your Note 2 with Linux. So you could even put just Linux on there. And some interesting projects. These guys will tell you step by step. The one caveat I would say is there are many different kinds of Note 2s.
Yes.
You might have the EMEA version or the Korean version, the Americas version. You want to get, if you do the search and you do the ROMs, you want to get the one that's just for that version, N, whatever it is, 910U or whatever.
Yep.
Make sure you match that up. You'll see that in the About This Phone section. Because frankly, different ROMs will work and some others won't, but they might all be Galaxy 2, Note 2 ROMs.
Yeah, they might all be Note 2s, but they have very specific differences.
Yeah.
And if you put the wrong ROM or the wrong, you know, flash the wrong image onto it, you run the risk of, as they say, bricking your device, and then you're really without a whole lot of solutions.
Yeah. N7100 and 1705. It depends on what you got.
Yeah, I found
this is a fun project, though.
It is a lot of fun, especially if you're doing it for the first time. It's a lot more fun if you have a device that you can kind of not feel so
right.
So emotional about.
If you brick it. Yeah.
Exactly,
yeah.
Because there's a little bit of a learning curve to it. If you go to XDA and you do a search for how to root Samsung Galaxy Note 2 Beginner's Guide, there is a link there, that will kind of walk you through the process. And, you know, it involves downloading. Are you PC or Mac or Linux?
Oh, well, here at home we have a mixed bag.
Okay. Well, that's actually really good, because I think on this older device, the rooting instructions that I found rely on a Samsung program called Odin.
Which is only for Windows.
And that's only for Windows. Yeah. And so it would involve you downloading Odin, plugging your phone into, basically following the instructions. But it's really just a matter of downloading the appropriate software for your device.
See all the models there? Those are all the different models. You know what's cool is, I think this is before Samsung did the triangle protection, which would make it hard to root it. I think this is from an era where it was a little bit easier.
Yep, a little bit easier.
That's good news.
And that's kind of the challenge, right? Every phone has a different capability
it's
as
fun.
Far as this is concerned.
Since you're an IT guy, I think you'll kind of dig it. Yeah. And it really gets to understand how Android works and what you can modify and stuff. Don't be fooled by firmware. It's essentially installing a different operating system on the phone, just like you would put, say, you know, Linux on a PC.
Yeah.
It's very similar to that.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, okay.
It's a journey in and of itself, but it's a lot of fun. It opens up a lot of possibilities for devices that you might have otherwise assumed are just kind of ancient and not worth using anymore.
And so, thanks so much for the Catwoman.
Oh, great.
The Cat Leo. Have a great night, Stu. Thank you.
Thank you, Stu.
Take care. Stu in Madisonville, Kentucky. Next week, Megan Maroney will be here.
Woo-hoo.
She'll be our Android expert.
All right.
You have a question for Megan, here's how you ask.
Need tech help? The new screensavers are here with answers. Email your tech questions to newscreensavers@twit.tv.
Maybe I'll give Megan the guitar, and she can show us
she
can how
rock
she can
and
play.
Roll. Yeah. Does she play any instruments? Do you know?
I'm not sure that she
think
does.
So, yeah.
I'd be curious to find
she
out.
She plucks my heartstrings. Does that count? Now, I got to tell you, if you're a geek, coming up in a little bit, we're going to do the mailbag. But first, if you're a geek, there is a tool you need to know. It's open source, freely available, and massively useful for testing the security of your network. Father Robert Ballester shows you how to use Nmap.
Everything is hackable. That's something that every user should understand. There is no device that's perfect, no firewall that's impenetrable, no network that's been developed that can defend against exploits that might be created weeks, months, or years down the road. It took something like the Mirai threat that turned our IoT devices into a vast global botnet to open our eyes to the fact that our gear is vulnerable. However, if you're willing to put in the legwork, there is a way to take basic steps to ensure that your devices don't turn against you. And you can do it with a free piece of software called Nmap. Nmap is a security application available for Windows, Linux, and macOS that scans a network to discover devices and services on that network. More specifically, it gives you the ability to see if the devices you're connecting to your network have open ports and services that can be used by an attacker to own the device. After downloading and installing Nmap from nmap.org, you'll first want to get your basic network information. For example, if you're using Windows, use CMD, then the command ipconfig to get your device IP and gateway. Now start Nmap. There's a GUI and a command line version of the application. I'm a fan of the command line, but for this demo, we're going to start with the GUI. Remembering your gateway information, do a quick ping scan of your network range. If you're using a consumer router, which is typically a /24 range, and default gateway of 192.168.1.1, then you would tell Nmap to scan 192.168.1.1-255. That's everything on the network. Nmap will quickly ping every address in that range to see if a device responds. The GUI will then give you a list of all the devices that responded, as well as basic information about those devices, such as the MAC address, IP address, manufacturer, and the ping latency. That's a good start, but now let's get serious. Find a device that you want to test, such as this OnePlus 5 phone at 192.168.1.79. We want to see if this device has any ports and services open that can be exploited. I prefer the command line, so I'm dropping back into the shell, and with the command nmap and the IP address of the device, it will port scan the most often used ports and report back with any services that it has detected. In this case, it reports that all scanned ports are closed. Since this is a device that shouldn't be responding to any outside calls for service, that's a good thing. If you want a more detailed analysis, use the GUI and a comprehensive scan to scan all ports, including stealth ports, and look for any suspicious services. Now, this will take longer, in some cases a lot longer, so just know that you want to start with a quick scan and then move to something a bit deeper. Now, eventually, when you do find devices with open ports, it's time to break out your Google Foo and match up the available services with the devices on which they are detected. Close anything that isn't absolutely necessary and be paranoid enough to rescan your network from time to time, saving logs so that you can compare your device over time. This is barely the basics of Nmap. Nmap can do so much more. In fact, we've covered it on two of my shows, This Week in Enterprise Tech and Know How. But for now, the fact that it can give you an easy way to find the ports and services that are open on your network should give you a leg up in starting to secure those networks. Additionally, while Nmap is really good at analyzing and perhaps starting to close down those services that shouldn't exist, it's not really great at stopping botnets or malware that already exists in your gear. For that, we're going to need another free piece of software called Wireshark and some gear called Taps. But that's for a future segment. Until then, I'm Father Robert Ballester, the Digital Jesuit, for Twit TV.
Thank you, Father Robert. Yeah, right. Wireshark and Nmap. That's all you need, baby. You're golden.
That's all I've ever needed.
Thank you, Father Robert. Thank you for being here, Mr. Jason. How are you? Day off and everything.
It's all good. I love it. All About Android Tuesdays,
5 p.m. Pacific, roughly.
Yeah.
8 p.m. Eastern.
Usually later than that.
6 p.m.
We take a while to ramp up, but even the pre-show is a lot of fun.
So. Oh, yeah. I always watch the pre-show. Florence Ion, Ron Reynolds.
Ron Richards.
I used to work with a guy named Ron Reynolds, but that's another day. And, of course, Tech News Weekly, you do it with Megan every Thursday.
Yeah.
It's time for the mailbag.
Hello, mailbox.
Hello, mailbag.
What is hidden inside of you today?
Oh, another great Tech TV memory. This is a nice one. Jerry's been going to his... Apparently, Jerry stole everything from Tech TV before he left. Jerry was showing me this the other day. This was when Tech TV had money. Paul Allen.
No kidding. The money. Fillmore.
They commissioned a poster, a Fillmore style poster, for our holiday party. This is 2000, right?
Wow.
With the Cheese Balls, who were a local group, it was a really fun party. Lots of food.
Never did it again.
Spent so much money.
Did everybody get one of these posters?
No, I didn't get one. Did you get one? You got one. Yeah. Oh, those were the days.
That is so cool.
Tech TV. Wow. And this is in pristine condition.
I haven't, yeah.
You haven't?
Yeah.
You just... What do you have? Like a room full of memorabilia?
Not anymore.
He used to have a room.
Piece by piece, he's brought it onto this show.
All right. It's time for the email. Question one. Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Oh, hi, Mark. New screensavers. Can you show how I can change the permissions of an app after I have downloaded it? Love the show. Leonard.
Thank you for writing, Leonard.
Change the permissions of an app after I've downloaded it.
Yeah, so when you install...
Oh, he's talking about Android.
He's talking about iOS and Android, I believe. Actually, I'm not really quite sure, but I just assumed it's pretty easy on both, right?
It is, yeah.
On iOS, if you go into the settings, and this is always so weird for my brain because I don't think of apps as just existing in your main tree of settings. But on iOS, they do. You just have to keep scrolling until you get to the bottom list of all the apps that you have installed.
Yeah.
Dive into there, and then it gives you kind of your ability to use the switch to toggle the permissions on a per-app basis.
That's kind of the hardest thing to get used to with iOS, that normally in Android, all the settings are stored
in the app.
And in iOS, you like, for instance, if you're going to do a search of Apple Mail, go ahead and try to find the search in Apple Mail. There is no search in Apple Mail. You have to do it from the system. Same thing. If you want to set notification settings, permissions, all of that stuff, you have to do that in the settings. And you can do it, of course, just by going in there. Here's location, permissions, access to your contacts. And, of course, iOS asks you as needed. So the first time you launch the app, you won't be asked about all these permissions. But at some point, the app might say, well, I'd like to see your contact list so I can find other people like you who use this app. Then they'll ask you. If you say yes and you go, no, you can go right in here in contacts and just turn that off. And in most cases, the app will, I'm doing this upside down and backwards like Ginger Rogers. There you go. In most cases, the app will continue to operate just fine. You can see microphone, speech recognition. In fact, it's not a bad idea to go through these. The problem is, if you're like me,
look at that.
You got a lot of apps to search through.
But you also don't want to use too blunt of an object either and just say, no apps should get my contact or no apps should get this, because some apps rely on that stuff and you might be okay with that on a per app basis.
Now, in Android, sometimes it's in the app.
Yeah, Android's a little different. I have the OnePlus 5T and it's actually different than your standard. Like if you had a Pixel, it would be a little different.
But in
settings on the OnePlus 5T, there's an app section. Go into there, and the OnePlus 5T gives you a little bit more than what you get on the Pixel. It gives you an application list, which is pretty standard from what you'll get on the Pixel. You go in there, and then there's a little permissions block, and you can toggle on or off. But it also gives you on the 5T this app's permission section, which feels a little redundant, but it gives you access. It says this many apps have access to your camera.
This many apps
have access to your contacts.
So this is the opposite of Apple. Apple, you have to go one by one through the apps. But let's say you just want to protect location information. With Android, you can go right to this location setting, see all the apps that have location access. Actually, it's microphone. If you go up one, it'll be location. But the same idea.
Sorry.
You'll see all the apps that have location. You're doing it upside down, too. And you can decide, it's much, to me, that's much easier. I think you work from the permissions to the app rather than the app to the permissions.
Yeah, so it's nice to have the option. I think on the Pixel, you don't get that much.
It's pretty similar, I think. Actually.
Do you actually get
how much they look alike. So let's say,
you do. All the same. I just didn't remember seeing that.
Body sensors. I didn't even know. Is somebody watching my body? Yes. So these are all the things. But it makes sense. They're the health applications.
Yeah.
Although, really, do you want Google Play services? Or you may say, hey, you know what? These guys should have access. So I'm going to give them permission now. So that's,
Skype,
I think it's nice to have
Skype wants body
that.
Sensor permission?
What? No.
Why would Skype,
turn that off.
Why would Skype need that? Skype wants everything, doesn't
it? You seem to be gaining some weight. I think we should talk.
I have someone I want you to chat with.
Skype lady, she's keeping her eye on me all the time. So I do think it's a good idea. The permissions model has changed over time.
Yeah.
For a while, Apple, actually Google would ask you at all up front when you first installed the app. Then they finally went the Apple route, which is asking you
which
is needed.
Is the better way to do it. In the context of the app, while you're using it, you get to determine, this would be why I would want to give permission to this app to have access to my microphone, because it allows me to do this feature.
When it's asking you, I'd like to send you a text message, but you need to give me permission.
Right.
That is much,
makes
I think,
way
much
more sense.
Connected to the action.
We also got an email from Jeff who says, just the other day, my Note 3, don't laugh, he says, began to show signs of hijacking by Samsung. I'm now being forced to use Samsung Internet and their TouchWiz Easy Home integration.
Ew.
I don't like the way they've forced this on their consumers and can't find a solution to get rid of this. If this is happening on the Note 8, I'm ready to change my plans and lose Samsung. Any suggestions? It's hard to know what exactly you're experiencing here. I don't think that Samsung is necessarily saying, from this day forward on Note 3 devices, we're going to make it so you can't set a different browser default.
If they are, shame on them.
Yeah, but I feel like we would know a little bit more about
that. The screams of pain.
Yes, from a lot of people. I put some calls out on Twitter to see if Note 3 owners also experienced this, and it was kind of a mixed bag. Some people were like, well, no, I use Chrome all the time, and it never changes on me. Other people were like, yeah, I've experienced this before. I had to uninstall my preferred app and reinstall it and then do the always use this browser process again, and for whatever reason that fixed it. I'm guessing, but I don't think that Samsung's necessarily doing that specific thing deliberately. I'm guessing there's something weird as far as the apps that you have installed and maybe an unintentional setting on the background that's happened when you install an app and it decides to make some sort of big sweeping change on your device you didn't realize it happened.
You could turn off Easy Home. That's a switch.
It should
settings.
Be.
It should
yeah.
be.
And I don't know
in fact,
why.
I don't use TouchWiz. I just use either Nova settings or Action Launcher. My favorite is Action Launcher. And then you don't have to use anything. You know, it doesn't even look like a Samsung.
Right? Yeah.
And as that's in the default apps. You should be able to choose any browser. Although, I do have to make a plug for the Samsung Internet browser. It's the fastest browser out there.
Yeah.
By a long shot faster than Chrome. It's not as capable. Maybe it doesn't have some of the blocking that you would like. But I think Samsung does a very nice browser.
Yeah, people seem pretty happy with the Samsung browser. I really didn't spend a whole lot of time using it, but I've read that people, you know, a lot of people actually prefer it over Chrome.
And to answer your question, I use a Note 8. No, it doesn't force you to do that. I would never use a Note 8. I use Action Launcher, and I use Chrome as my default browser. And it has so far not turned that off.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, there we go.
There we go.
Another great show. Thank you for playing the guitar, for testing your hearing.
Yes.
Thank you to our great studio audience. You guys really were helpful. Happy birthday, Seth. This is his surprise. Actually, we should go buy him a beer next door. That would be a good surprise. Yeah. Thank you for coming. I appreciate it. You too, Ricardo. You're invited. And thanks to all of you for coming and visiting us. We would love to have you in studio with us. All you have to do is email tickets at twit.tv. We'll put a chair out for you. Make sure... that Moses doesn't fire upon you when you enter the door. It's important. Email tickets at twit.
He's a little trigger happy, but yeah.
You know, he's got the taser on his left hip, or is it the right hip? I can never... The gun's on the... Anyway, just let us know. Tickets at twit.tv. You can also watch live. That's a lot safer. Streaming at twit.tv/live. If you do that, join us in the chat room. That, I can't promise, is safe. irc.twit.tv. You can talk with the kids in the back of the class. You know, we're on Amazon's flash briefing now in more countries. We've been in the United States for a while. Thank you for those of you who listen. The tens of thousands of people, right, listen to Twit on the flash briefing as part of their daily news hit. You can also do it now in Australia, India, New Zealand,
Canada,
and Canada.
And the UK.
And the UK. Maybe I threw New Zealand in by accident. I don't know. All the Commonwealth countries. No, I don't think New Zealand, but the other ones, yes. So here's what you do. You go to your Amazon Echo app, and you go to the settings, and you go to the flash briefing, and look for Twit, and add it. We do little bits of this show and all the other shows, so you can hear them first thing in the morning when you get up or whenever you listen to your flash briefing. We also would love it if you would take our Twit survey. Last few weeks for this, we do this once a year. We ask our audience to tell us a little bit about themselves. We do not collect individual information. Absolutely not. We will not save your email. Absolutely not. This is really to know in aggregate a little bit more about you and to maybe help our sponsors understand what they're getting. We really appreciate you as our listeners, and we don't want to give up your privacy in any way. So this seems like a good compromise once a year to ask you to answer just a few questions. It'll only take you about 4 minutes, 5 minutes. twit.tv/survey. While you're there, go to twit.tv/NSS. You can listen to this show, audio and video on demand, or subscribe in your favorite podcatcher, Pocket Casts, Overcast, iTunes, the podcast app on your phone. Make sure, though, you do subscribe. That way you'll get every episode of the new Screensavers. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. Thanks for being here, Jason.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Subscribe to twit.tv/NSS. Yep. Okay. Yep. Subscribe to the newsletter, too. Jerry puts a lot of work into that. Yep. He's standing right there. That's why I'm saying it. twit.tv/newsletter. Okay? Don't hit me. Twit. No, he does. He works hard on that. And that's what you'll subscribe to get a look ahead at what's coming up.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jason Howell.
Absolutely.
Thank you all for being here. We'll see you next time on the new Screensavers. Bye-bye.